Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Manchester Is Red podcast from the Manchester Evening News. I'm your host, Dominic Booth, and we're here to review United's disappointing Europa League defeat on penalties to Villarreal. I'm joined by our chief United writer, Samuel Lukast, from his hotel in Gdansk. How are you, Samuel?
Hello. Well, thank you. Not too bad at all.
And Tyrone Marshall is with us as well. Ty, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Dom. Yeah, good.
Yeah, a damn sight better than many Manchester United players will probably be feeling the morning after the night before. 1-1 ended after 120 minutes of pretty turgid football in Gdansk against Villarreal, and then a penalty shootout that seemed to go on forever until David De Gea missed his kick after failing to save the previous 11 that were taken at him. Where'd you start, Samuel? I mean, United didn't perform the way that they could have done. Solskjaer admitted they didn't turn up. And a lot of the spotlight has come down on the manager after this defeat for his management of the game, for his team selection, his substitutions. Do you agree with the criticism that is coming his way?
I suppose I have to, because I have been part of that criticism. It was just rank bad mismanagement from start to finish. I said to Ty before the game, just that if United lost this, it would be too easy just to pin it on Solskjaer, and it was too easy to pin it on him during the shootout. It was a strange dynamic, because I thought, if United win this, how the hell am I going to actually turn this match piece around and write about it, because they'd played dreadfully. It would have been a penalty one on penalties, and if they were to have won it on penalties, it would have had to have been a Villarreal player not hitting the target, because there was no way De Gea was ever going to save one. But the alarm bells rang as soon as the team dropped, with, I'll say at the start, Rashford and Greenwood in it, but I mean Rashford in it. Rashford should just never have started. Three of us didn't have him in any of our personal 11s for the final. But I think we all knew that Rashford was going to start. But the surprise was that he accommodated Greenwood as well, which had a knock-on effect in that it meant Pogba dropped back into midfield because Fred was dropped. And that meant United didn't have Pogba further forward, and Pogba was just ineffectual from deep. He's played his best football for United this season from the left, and Solskjaer just decided to take him out of his best position effectively, which was counterproductive. Rashford really needed to perform in getting the call from Solskjaer, and unfortunately for him, he had the worst game of his career. He just could not do anything right, and it was pretty damning that not only was he playing badly, he was playing badly against Juan Foyth, who obviously is a loanee from Tottenham, and you think of how bad Tottenham's fullbacks have been this season, and there's Juan Foyth, who they deem surplus, pocketing Rashford. I was just astonished how bad Rashford was, and then I was even more astonished that Solskjaer didn't have the bravery to take him off. And that just reflected horrendously on Solskjaer. And that's obviously connected with the call in playing both Greenwood and Rashford. There wasn't a standout game changer to come on. And I mean, you could say he left himself short in reserve and attack, as far as attackers were concerned. But he had Juan Mata, who has come off the bench a number of times and been a game changer for United. There was Van der Beek, Ahmad, Daniel James. Now, three of those four players are Solskjaer signings, and he pretty much didn't trust any of them to come on and have an impact. And perversely, it was probably a bad thing United equalised when they did, because Solskjaer thought, great, I don't have to make a substitution now. I don't have to take Rashford off. I don't have to change it up. I don't have to think too much. And it was just absolutely telling that they didn't make a change until the 100th minute. And I don't think Fred was a bad call to come on at all. I think, you know, a friend was texting me during the game and I was saying to him, put Fred on, take Rashford off, put Pogba up top. You know, that's tactically proactive, that's adventurous. But unfortunately, I just question whether United have a brave enough manager after last night. And that's without even getting into the goalkeeper situation. You knew he didn't even consider taking De Gea off for Henderson, which is absolutely what he should have done. When penalties were looming, I certainly wasn't the only one thinking it. De Gea is probably the most infamous keeper in history for his penalty record and how bad it is. Villarreal would have known about that as well. And you just feared for him. And unfortunately, that penalty shootout was torturous for De Gea in that he conceded all of them. And then when it was his turn to take a penalty, he's the fall guy. It just could not have gone any worse for him. I think it was the right call that Solskjaer made in starting De Gea. De Gea deserved to start. But when penalties were looming, when the shootout was looming, he had to take De Gea off and he didn't. I think the only thing he got all right, Solskjaer, was putting Telles and Mata on because they were only put on to take penalties and they both scored their penalties.
Yeah, the goalkeeping situation, Ty, I think I agree with everything Samuel said there. I think that, you know, De Gea should have started. He had been the Europa League keeper. He deserves a start, but it doesn't necessarily make him the best keeper that United have got, and certainly not the best keeper at saving penalties. And it's very rare that you get a penalty shootout where a goalkeeper sort of embarrasses themselves and comes away as the fall guy, because usually they've only anything to gain from it. But De Gea's record at saving penalties, as Samuel says, has been so poor. It almost felt like, despite all Solskjaer's mistakes and United's poor performance for the previous 2 hours, all De Gea had to do was save a penalty and they would have won the trophy.
Yeah, they would have done. And, you know, it would have been... When finals go to penalties, it's such a bizarre narrative, because had De Gea saved Rooney's penalty and scored his, we'd have been talking about how United can build on this and how they got away with it. But when it becomes, you know, when they lose it, it's all a bit more starker. And, you know, the penalty shootout was a disaster. You're right that he was never going to make the change with goalkeepers. And had he made the sub, it'd have, you know, the goalkeeping situation's been unclear all season and remains unclear. By starting De Gea, he had probably annoyed Henderson. Had he taken De Gea off for Henderson in the 119th minute, it'd have probably had a situation where he's managed to annoy both of his senior goalkeepers when he needs to keep at least one of them on side going into next season. And really, he needs to make a decision very quickly on who his number one is, because I don't think the situation's helping anyone. I mean, watching it, I was watching De Gea quite closely in the penalties, partly because of his awful penalty record. And as an amateur goalkeeper myself of absolutely no repute, I was interested to see how he went about it. And it felt to me like he changed strategy at least a couple of times in it. The first couple of penalties, he kind of guessed which way to go and went early, as he often does. Then it felt like he stood up and tried to react to where they were going. And then he went back to guessing again. And by the time he'd gone back to guessing, I mean, it's hard to tell from the angle you get on TV when you're not getting the view across the line. But it looked like for at least half of them, he had both feet off the line. So even if he had saved one, it wouldn't have counted and they'd have had to retake it. There was at least three or four minimum, I would say, where he had both feet off the line when the ball was kicked and he dived to make the save, which in an era of VAR, we just know that's going to be pulled back. When Rooney saved from De Gea, you saw the first thing the referee did was put his hand to his ear to hear the VAR official tell him whether it was a legitimate save or not. And had De Gea managed to save one, I think there's every chance he'd have been left with the embarrassment of it being ruled out and he'd have to try again. So, you know,
It happened against Palace, didn't it? Opening day of the season.
Yes, it did. At the start of the season.
The one time he actually saved. It was chalked off.
One thing that didn't get reported as well, I think, was the fact that Fernandes won the toss and chose to go second in the shootout, which struck me as a particularly odd decision. I think it lost, you know, you lose a lot of momentum by doing that. You put a lot of pressure on yourself. Mm. And, you know, it felt like, you know, like you said, Ty, United were always chasing that. And as Samuel said, it never looked like De Gea was making saves.
I mean, I was just on the goalkeeping situation. I would say, I mean, De Gea didn't really get near any. But in terms of ones that should have been saved, I mean, Rooney should have saved more than De Gea's. He should have kept Luke Shaw's out and he should probably have kept Fernandes's out. So had De Gea somehow managed to save one, the spotlight would have fallen on Rooney for not saving penalties that he really should have saved. In the end, you know, he got away with that and De Gea didn't. But we know De Gea's record stretches back over, I think it's 30 to 35 penalties in a row he's conceded now, which is it 40? I mean, that's just absolutely embarrassing for a goalkeeper, appalling, isn't it? I think you could put me in goal against professional footballers and I would save one in 40. I'm pretty confident of that.
Yeah, I did actually say that while watching it last night. I thought I would have saved one of them. But we'll move on. So actually, the best penalty of the night was taken very surprisingly by Fred. And Sam, you made the point earlier that maybe he was harshly dropped and it altered United's shape for the game. And also, like you said, it would have left them with an option to bring off the bench either Rashford or Greenwood, probably Rashford because he was the man out of form going into the game. A lot of fans didn't pick up on that as a point, Samuel, because I think the partnership of Fred and McTominay is increasingly unpopular with supporters, but it is United's big game partnership in midfield and it was scrapped. And really, that proved quite costly in the end.
Yeah, the social media trials got what they wanted. Fred came out of the team. It wasn't Look Fred, whatever they call it. And United lost another final. So I'm sure they'll be quite pleased about that. I think when we put our panel out or when one of us tweeted it out, someone said, "Why have you all gone with McTominay and Fred?" And look, these people on Twitter who rage like that and play Championship Manager or Football Manager or FIFA, that they don't know a lot about football. And in taking Fred out of that team last night, United were unbalanced. I know Pogba's a midfielder. It's not like he put Phil Jones in midfield or someone completely incongruous, but Pogba has played his best football for United this season from the left. And he's done that. Football has come pretty recently as well. So it made infinite sense to keep Pogba on the left. United didn't do that. They lost his influence higher up. Fernandes was poor. Rashford was just dreadful. So, Cavani obviously got the goal, but he didn't exactly perform outright. The best of the front four was Greenwood. And given how much they were struggling, they needed a player with Pogba's presence and quality further forward, and they didn't bother giving the attackers that. I think in terms of the attack all night, I mean, Cavani, Fernandes and Rashford finished the game. Greenwood was the only one who didn't. So in a game where ideally you want to win it in regulation time or extra time just to prevent David De Gea having to face penalties, United didn't actually do an awful lot to try and win the game. They just stuck with what they had. And Solskjaer said it afterwards. He said, I had Rashford, Greenwood, Cavani. He pretty much listed the front six, and that was why he didn't make a substitution until the 100th minute. And that was the patent problem when the team dropped. He had deprived himself of an obvious game changer to change it up. But even then, he still could have brought Fred on for Rashford earlier. But he just... Unfortunately, Solskjaer has his favourites. Unfortunately for United, Solskjaer has his favourites. And I think Rashford might be the favourite of them all, maybe second favourite to Fernandes. And I don't quite get it. I don't think you can just be dictated to by someone's PR image. And that's the impression that has been given with his handling of Rashford. And he's also overplayed him this season. I mean, Rashford was getting treatment last night. Daniel James was stood on the touchline ready to come on. And he still didn't come on.
The stadium announcer said that Rashford was coming off.
Yeah. Rashford was so bad. The stadium announcer said that he was the one who'd come off when it was Pogba. And a sad consequence of it all is that, of course, a black player plays badly and they get racially abused by lowlives on Twitter. And unfortunately, that's just a never-ending cycle. And there's no right or wrong way of going about it. But I just think in identifying and giving these lowlives oxygen, I fear that the media are empowering them because they must get a kick out of it.
Yeah. Obviously, that is an absolutely appalling consequence that we don't want to see. I guess the flip side, Tyrone, to Samuel's argument that Solskjaer got his man management wrong on the night and his substitutions wrong, and a lot of people have made this point, is that United didn't have depth and there was very little in terms of options that he could have brought on in Gdansk. I think maybe the fact that Donny van de Beek cost nearly 40 million and wasn't used at all is counter to that argument. But do you give fuel to that, that United are still struggling for depth? Solskjaer came out quite brazenly and said that he needs three first-team signings this summer to compete. But yeah, what do you make of it? And this is only against Villarreal, seventh best team in La Liga.
Yeah, I mean, Villarreal had made five substitutes in the 90 minutes while United had made none. You're not telling me that Villarreal have a deeper squad than Man United do. It's just not the case. So, and the fact is that four of those signings on the bench were Solskjaer signings, and we can discount Ahmed because he's clearly one for the future, and it would be bold to throw him on in a final like that. But certainly in James and Van der Beek, they are two attacking Solskjaer signings that he clearly didn't trust. So, you know, if it is the case that he's concerned at a lack of depth, unfortunately, it lands at his door. I thought the fact is, there was, when the team came out, there was a lot of United fans singing Solskjaer's praises for going bold and playing such an adventurous team. We all know that had Fred been fit, Fred and McTominay would have started that game. It's not even a debate. They would have absolutely started, but Fred clearly wasn't fit enough.
It would have been the right decision, though, Tyrone.
Yeah, absolutely, it would have been the right decision. I think he's played them in too many games this year. I mean, they both got injured against Fulham. They should never have been on the pitch against Fulham. You can't play Fred and McTominay at home against a team already relegated from the Premier League. I mean, that's an embarrassing midfield setup, frankly, and it is far, far too cautious, and that has to change next season. But in big games and in a final, I think they can offer United good protection, and a final is always going to be tight, as much as United are clearly a better team than Villarreal. So yes, it would have been the right decision. And I guess moving Pogba back, he was probably never going to bring Matic in, so moving Pogba back, I guess, was the next obvious solution. But I mean, personally, I thought Van der Beek at Wolves was arguably the most complete game he's had for United. I thought he was really good in one of those deep positions, and it might have been a risk to throw him into a final, but if anything, European games suit him more than Premier League games at the moment. So you could have played Van der Beek there and left Pogba on the left. So there were options to be had, I guess, rather than playing Rashford and Greenwood. And, you know, we can argue that it did leave United short of an attacking substitution. They didn't have Martial. Obviously, you could have came on the wing for Rashford and offered more of a threat. But, you know, the fact is Solskjaer signed James and Van der Beek, and they were perhaps two of the most obvious attacking changes. I mean, you're never going to take Fernandes off in a game like that, but he was, you know, he was marked out of the game entirely for 120 minutes, and that really cost United badly as well, in that they couldn't play through him. So, you know, there were options to be had there, and sometimes you can say there's a lack of depth, but do you persist with a Rashford who, you know, he played poorly and has been playing poorly for a while, but he's also played through two injuries this year. I mean, he needs a rest. He is completely and utterly done, and, you know, part of that, I think, has to fall on Solskjaer as well, and that he's been flogged through injuries when clearly he should have been taken out of the firing line and given more rest. He looks just completely exhausted. I wouldn't have him anywhere near the European Championships this summer. And there's an argument to say that, you know, you can rely on him for... He has a habit of popping up with goals even when he's playing badly. But when you've got a Rashford who is, by 80 minutes, he was barely even 50% fit. Is it better to have a 50% Rashford or 100% Daniel James? You know, you're probably better with 100% Daniel James. So it seemed an obvious substitution, but I think there was far too much caution in the way Solskjaer went about managing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Samuel, what happens next then from all this? It feels like United have very much made their transfer priorities clear throughout the latter stages of this season, and they were magnified by the game in Gdansk. So is Solskjaer going to get the backing that he's been calling out for? Is he going to get the backing in terms of his job security for the next season? And what must United achieve if they're going to continue what has been a progressive season ultimately, but a disappointing one at the same time?
I don't think they'll get everything that they want in a window. I just think under the current regime, it's pretty much impossible. And then you factor in the pandemic, the valuation of certain players, how United go about deal-making. I think if they were to get two of the three, and by saying that, I mean like high quality players, that in the last window, the emphasis was on fleshing out the squad. Telles, Van der Beek, Cavani, they were Ahmad, Palestri, they were not players to go straight in the first team. I think we maybe thought that was the case with Van der Beek, but it's proven to be anything but. Whereas this summer, they need players to go straight into that starting side and to improve it. Yeah, someone like Varane would, Pau Torres would, the way he played last night, I thought him and Albiol were excellent. Declan Rice would, obviously Jadon Sancho would, but they are not going to get Sancho, Varane and Rice. It's too expensive. Rice is probably... Varane and Sancho are more elite players, more esteemed players, however you want to term it, than Rice. But Rice is more expensive because of his age, of his contract situation, the club he's attached to, etc. I think it's safe to say he's a first teamer at international level as well. So they're going to have to be quite clever in certain areas. They're going to have to make definitive decisions with some of the current players as well. Solskjaer needs to stop pussyfooting around the goalkeeper situation and tell Dean Henderson or David De Gea, you can go in the summer, be it on loan or on a permanent. Both of those players cannot be at United next season. It's just an unsustainable dynamic. And the goalkeeping situation has been mismanaged ever since Sergio Romero was dropped for the Europa League semi-final last season. Paul Pogba, there needs to be clarity there. That they could maybe get away with it for another year. But of course, they risk losing him for without obtaining a fee. And I don't think the Glazers, given their nature, would countenance that. So I don't think Solskjaer, it rams it home after last night because he was, frankly, he was gutless with the way he went about a lot of last night. I don't think he's made a legitimately brave call in his time back at United. Some might say Lukaku. I don't think selling Lukaku was a brave call. Lukaku wanted to leave. His second season at United was dreadful. He didn't. His face just didn't fit. On Solskjaer's watch, they've kowtowed to Martial. They've indulged Pogba. They've re-signed De Gea. They even re-signed Eric Bailly. And I was disappointed by he played last night just because of the interview he gave with the Times, which was a very good interview with Danny Lopez and conducted in Spanish. But there he is talking. You know, I've signed a new contract, but if I'm not playing, then I've got to consider my options. Solskjaer should be saying to the guy, know your place. You're a crock. I didn't want to give you a contract and I'd rather get you out of here. So let's get you out of here. It's just the wrong way to go about it. And it looks weak. It makes the manager look weak when he then decides to put the guy in the team for the final. So they've got big decisions to make with the current players and in terms of the players they go after. There was some histrionics from United fans last night saying, what, three players? Like, we need five, we need six, we need seven, which is complete nonsense. I mean, they are not that bad. As you say, they have had a progressive season in the Premier League. There is a lot of cause for optimism with the current players they've got there, and they look pretty good in a number of areas, and there have been some terrific individual performances this season. But they do need a minimum three players to go into that first 11, because next season, I think it was probably it could be the most competitive, certainly at the start of it anyway, Premier League season since Guardiola first came over to England. You've got City still wanting to, Guardiola is still at City, Tuchel shaking things up at Chelsea, Liverpool are going to retaliate under Klopp. Those three coaches are legitimately better coaches than Solskjaer. So he's got a hell of a big task if he's going to achieve his objective next season, which is at the very least to mount a credible title challenge or to win the title. But an awful lot needs to happen for United to get into that position.
And probably to win a trophy too, with the narrative going on that United will be 5 years without a trophy if they don't win one next season. Tyrone, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Samuel says there that it is unlikely that United will get three marquee elite names for the first team. So what two positions, if it has to just be two, what two positions do they have to prioritise based on where they've gone wrong this season at times and what needs to be improved?
I mean, centre back, top of the list, 100%. definitely a centre-back to play alongside Maguire. Beyond that, I would probably edge towards central midfield over right wing, but I don't think there's much in it. I mean, we've all been critical of Rashford on this podcast, and he was awful last night and has been poor for a while. But if he can have a good rest, I think we know he's a worthy first-teamer at United. He's surpassed 20 goals in two successive seasons. There's a lot that depends on keeping him fit, but a front three of Rashford, Cavani and Greenwood with Fernandes behind them, I don't think that's far off title-winning, title-challenging material. Adding Sancho into that would add to the strength considerably and allow a lot more rotation. But I think United can live without Sancho, considering how well Greenwood's played recently. And the fact, for me, he looks more suited at the moment to playing on the right than playing centre-forward anyway. So I think I would say centre-back and centre-mid. And if they, you know, if they signed Varane and Rice, say, then you're talking a team that would have, say, Varane, Maguire, Shaw, Rice, Fernandes, Pogba, Rashford, Cavani. That team should have, that team has to challenge for the title. So I think even with two signings of that calibre, they need to be getting very close next year, because you look at individual players, and we don't know what's going to happen with Pogba, but I mean, if I was Solskjaer, I'd be absolutely demanding he stays this year and risk losing him on a free. And of course, he's another one that you can throw into that front three mix, given how well he's played on the left. You know, if you had players of, you know, if you say they got Varane, and you've got Varane, Fernandes, Pogba and Cavani in the same team, I mean, they are four of the best players in Europe over recent seasons. That team has to get very close to winning the title.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair point. Samuel, finally, we can't do predictions this week. No upcoming game, which is...
Thank God.
Yes, which is a virtue for all of us. I'm going to ask you both to rate United's season out of 10. Obviously, second in the league, Europa League final, and not much else, I guess. Disappointment in the Champions League and in a couple of the other cup competitions, semi-final of the League Cup. Samuel, what's that? Is that 6 out of 10?
That is 6 out of 10. I think, but by my ratings history, if you get a 7 is good. Yeah. So, given it's not been a good season, it has to be a 6.
Well, Tomane only got 7 last night, but I thought it was a little bit harsh, but there you go, that's just me. Tyrone, would you agree with that, or would you be a little bit more generous?
No, I would roughly agree with that, really. 6, maybe 6.5, just to be different. You know, they're getting this tag of, I don't want to say big game bottlers, but, you know, when they're getting stage fright and when the heat is on, they're falling apart. They should have won that game comfortably last night. In the knockout rounds, they beat Real Sociedad and Granada 8-0 over 4 games. And Villarreal finished below Real Sociedad and above Granada. They are teams of equal standard. And if they played Villarreal over 2 legs in the round of 16, they'd probably beaten them 4-0 on aggregate. So it's undoubted that there is, when the heat is on, this team has questions to answer, given the way they keep losing in quarterfinals, semi-finals and now a final. As soon as they went top of the league in January, they got vertigo. They threw away a golden position in the Champions League group stages. So based on that, I think 6 is probably fair. I mean, they have progressed this season. They finished second. They finished second because they took advantage of Liverpool falling apart. They improved by 8 points, which is decent, I guess, but probably the minimum you'd expected. And I think if they're going to win the league next year, they're going to have to improve on this tally by at least 16 points, if not 20. And I think that's going to be the big challenge this year. I think we all expect Solskjaer to get a new contract this summer, but feels to me like next season is going to be decisive for him. I'm not sure he can survive being the manager that oversees a 5th season without a trophy.
Well said. A final word for you, Samuel. Have you at least enjoyed your trip to Gdansk? Can you give us a Judith Chalmers Wish You Were Here report from how that was?
It is a very beautiful and picturesque place. I didn't do a lot of research into it before coming here, because sometimes if you're going somewhere new, you like to go there blind, and it was quickly apparent even the first night we got here that it's just lovely. It's lovely to wander around. It's been a brilliant choice by UEFA. UEFA do get a lot wrong in terms of cities they choose for certain finals, and there have been an awful lot of questionable decisions, but this like Stockholm, it's a perfect location for a Europa League final. The stadium's not too far away from the city centre, so a lot of fans were able to walk there last night. And it's just, you know, work has to intrude, so you can't maximise it as much as you'd like to. But that can't even be classified as a complaint. It's a privilege to be present here and to just experience somewhere new. It's certainly not the kind of place that you'd imagine going on your own back. So, but I think I've certainly been recommended Krakow already, and I think I'll definitely have to go there at some point in the future.
Yeah, I would recommend Krakow. Safe journey home, Samuel. Thank you for your coverage of this final, thank you, Tyrone, for your contributions as well.
No problem. Thank you, Dom.
And we'll be back with another episode of the Manchester is Red podcast very, very soon. No doubt a few transfer specials throughout the summer and maybe a little bit of looking ahead to next season as well. But for now, from the three of us, it's thanks for listening, and we'll be with you again very soon.